Hi, I'm Debbie. I'm an alcoholic.
And hi, guys, and thank you for being here tonight and sharing in this day. It's with great honor and gratitude that I get to introduce Suzanne tonight to be your speaker. This lady saved my life, and thank you, Angela, for the chip. It's beautiful. She passes them on to me, but I'm going to be 82 when I get that one. God willing. So anyway, thank you guys for being here and sharing with this. And I love the family. That was an awesome, awesome night. And thank you for letting me be part of it.
I'm Suzanne, and I have some bad news, and I have some good news, and the bad news is alcoholism got me, but the good news is I have not had a drink since July 6, 1991, I guess if you don't get any other message, my message is somehow I've been able to live an amazing life, and when I got here, it wasn't anything amazing. My introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings was in 1986. I was 26 years old at the time. I was young. And I had left the bar in Anaheim, and at 3:30 in the morning, I didn't remember leaving the bar, which happened frequently for us, didn't it, sisters?
Mm-hmm.
And at 3:30 in the morning, I was pulled over by the CHP, and, oh, by the way, the bar was only maybe 10 miles away from where I lived, and 90 miles away from home. I was pulled over. I didn't remember driving any of that 90 miles, didn't know how I got there. In fact, I was stunned to find out I was behind the wheel. And so the judge sent me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and my thoughts were that CHP didn't have anything better to do with his time that night, that it had nothing to do with some really poor choices that I made, and really I was so heavily under the influence, I wasn't capable of making any decisions. I went to the meetings that the court mandated I attend, and at 26 years old, you know, I looked around these rooms and I thought it was a cult, and I didn't like the fact that people asked me my name. It was none of your business. People were holding hands after the meeting and said a prayer, and I thought that was completely unacceptable. I didn't want you to hold my hand. I didn't want to talk to you. I just wanted to get my court card signed. And I did not have any notion that I had a problem with drinking. But truth be told, I started at 21. I didn't start really young. I do remember my first experience with alcohol, and that was at sister number one's wedding. Back, I was, I think, 14 or 15, and I remember having one glass of champagne, and the next thing I know, her new husband was carrying me into my room at our house. I don't remember anything about her wedding reception. Most people don't have that kind of experience with alcohol, but that's how it affected me. I didn't drink every day after that. In fact, rarely I drank, but I had had so many different issues going on inside of me that I had like the perfect storm for an alcoholic. When I was 15, shortly after her wedding, by the way, I met who I thought was Mr. Wonderful. I was 15, he was 20. I ran away from home with this guy, and, you know, I want to say unbeknownst to me, but I might have known a little bit. He already had warrants out for his arrest. He had already been incarcerated. And he convinced me on the Greyhound bus from California to Salt Lake City, because that's the only bus that was leaving when we were running away from home. He convinced me that I needed to change my name. And I did that. I became Lisa and changed my last name. I don't know if I told my boys this, and both my sons are here tonight, but they were both had been born under fictitious names. They were Joseph and Joshua Seidlinger, because I was lying about who I was. He was lying about who he was. And, you know, as I look back, I was just a kid. I was more or less a hostage of that man. The most beautiful thing came out of that marriage. I did marry him. I'm so grateful for my two sons. They changed my life in ways I could have never imagined. But if you can imagine, I finally was able to escape that madness after he became the most wanted man in the state of Utah, practically. And you can imagine, being his wife, that I was in a lot of trouble too. And so God bless my father, who got me an attorney. And for 3 years, he sat with me on an airplane, took me back and forth to Salt Lake City. That man that I was married to, I did divorce. He was sentenced to life in prison. And he actually died in prison. I think it was 2004. So he was convicted in the early 80s. You know, I'm 21. I moved back home with my parents. I'm in no condition to try and be raising two boys. But that's when my drinking started. And it wasn't just drinking. It was something that I was searching for to fill up this hole inside of me. I felt lonely. I felt I was such a failure. I didn't finish high school. I could hardly get a job. Thank God for sister number one. Baby sister saved my life twice, but Terry got me a job. And I ended up working for that company for nearly 20 years. After my DUI in 86, the drinking continued. And for those of you, especially the women here, when I was looking around at the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought, you don't look like an alcoholic, and he doesn't, and I don't. I know at the time I was young. When I did get sober, I was 31, and I clearly remember some older people coming up to me and saying, honey, you're at an AA meeting, did you know? And I did know, but I didn't look like an alcoholic, and I always thought an alcoholic was somebody that was completely destitute, didn't have a home, didn't have a family, was all by themselves. I brought my little big book because the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was stunned what it knew about me. I didn't really know what alcoholism was. And it talks about me in here. In fact, it talks about women in here. So for all you women, because you probably don't think I look like an alcoholic today either, but I'm a recovered alcoholic. I haven't had a drink in 25 years. And you know what? The obsession has been removed from me. I can be around people. I couldn't at first. Initially, I was uncomfortable with it because I hadn't done very many life things without it. My life was centered around it. But what it did to me is it stole years of my life, like with my children. I didn't mean to. I never meant to be a negligent mother, but I was. Alcohol was the predominant thought in my mind. And what this book says about it is it's an obsession. And what happens to me is, because I never drink every day. That was another thing that I stayed in denial about. But when I wasn't having a drink, I was thinking about a drink. I was planning where I was going to go. I was trying to determine which of my sisters was going to babysit. But I couldn't get the thought out of my mind. And once I had one drink, there was absolutely no predicting what was going to happen to me. Ever. Not once. And I never planned on becoming so inebriated that I couldn't function. But that's what happened to me. I'm a blackout drinker, and most of the time I don't remember. And July 5th, 1991, I want to say it was a Wednesday or a Thursday. I don't really remember. And I don't know if my sons remember, but we lived in the Sprague house in the back. And one more time, you know, it was very common at my place of work that 5 o'clock would hit and the boss would open the bottom drawer and we would have a drink. And that's all I meant to have that night, was a drink. But if you're like me, once I put that in my body, I get this physical craving and I just want more. And I cannot shut the monster off once I have it. And the next thing I knew, I came to, I was at home, and my boys weren't there. And I did not remember speaking to them the night before. I didn't know what happened. And for you mothers in here, can you just imagine how that felt? The fear that I felt and the remorse that I felt and the shame that I felt, because I was going to have to call their friends to say, is he there? Is he there? Because I didn't know. And thank God they were safe. They stayed with somebody. And, you know, I swore off again. That's it. I'm never drinking again. And that's not exactly how it happened. But shortly after that is when my sister called to say, I'm coming out there to visit, and I need to go to a meeting. Will you go with me? And this is my recollection of that meeting. She probably has her own because she was all wrapped up in she needed a meeting. She really didn't care about me. She just needed to make sure she didn't use when she came to visit me. Because I don't know what it is about once you take any substance abuse away from us, life gets really, really different. And initially, it was really uncomfortable because, you know what, in every social engagement that I was involved in, there was always alcohol. I was always drinking. And so we learned that we don't function well without it, and that's a lie. That's a total lie. There is no way that I could come up here and tell a story in front of a crowd like this before without having a few, without the courage of the bottle. But it's not true. So my sister takes me to this Tuesday night meeting down in Cypress, California, which is where we were living at the time. And really nice people. It was a book study, which was really a blessing for me because my husband will probably agree, I'm still such a rebel. I still want to tell him or anybody else, you are not the boss of me. But I'm getting better. don't worry, there's hope for all of us. So we go to the meeting, and I don't know exactly what I heard in the book study, but what struck me was how friendly people were and how comfortable my sister was just showing up somewhere. She didn't know anybody, and she got through the night. She did. Something I did want to share about this book. This book, by the way, if you aren't familiar with it, was written by our founders. There's some great stories in it. My name is not mentioned, but I'm all over this book. But this is in the chapter called More About Alcoholism. And I mean, when I read this, I was like... and it says, to be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time, nor take the quantities some of us have. This is particularly true of women. Potential female alcoholics often turn into the real thing and are gone beyond recall in a few years. And you know what? I had drank for 10 years. It wasn't really that long in the grand scheme of my life. But do you know, I have very little memory of those 10 years because truly drinking wasn't fun for me. It made my life unmanageable. There's also a phrase in here, and I love this phrase because I knew what these three words meant. And those three words are pitiful, incomprehensible, demoralization. And when I heard that, I felt that in my inner gut of what that, I experienced that time and time again. Because I would swear it off. And I love where we read here that we'll try switching from scotch to brandy, drinking only natural wines, taking more physical exercise, reading inspirational books, going to health farms and sanitariums. And it goes on and on. And at the end of that, it says ad infinitum. Because a lot of us will try anything. And I don't know about you, but for me, it kept calling my name. And I would always think, I'm just going to have one or two. And that just, that never happened for me. That Tuesday night meeting, I don't know. I remember Angela pushing my elbow up when they were asking, are there any newcomers? And I think I had talked to her about what happened. It was just a couple of weeks before when I came home and my boys weren't there and I didn't know where they were. And just one more time, just full of fear and shame and remorse. And, you know, all that did was just make me feel terrible about myself, which set me up for more failure. That meeting became my home group. There was so many friendly people there. A guy came up and he wrote out a little index card and just hand wrote, here's some really great meetings in this town. And I thought, gosh, how nice. And somebody else asked me my name and I wasn't insulted that time. I think I was just ready. I had hit my bottom and, you know, I was raised in a really, really amazing family. Both my parents are still alive. I have three sisters, a sister by love, and four brothers. There's eight of us. And I think I just got lost in the middle somewhere, and somehow, because I was a smart kid, I got straight A's, and they sent us to private school, and you know what? Alcoholism doesn't care about that kind of stuff. As I look around the room, one of the things I love about Alcoholics Anonymous, when still coming to meetings, is the diversity here. I have met some of the most wonderful friends, and I have had some of these friends for 20-something years. I have a friend here that came from Corona. His name is Blaine. And you know what? Not only is he a friend, I don't know if he knows this, but I'm going to share this right now. Blaine helped me learn what a respectful man looks like. He helped me buy my first home. I learned how to trust him. I learned how to confide in him. There was a lot of things I didn't know about buying a house. And you know what? I wasn't embarrassed to ask him. My prideful self before would not have asked because I wouldn't have wanted to look stupid. And you know what I would have missed out on? He taught me so much. And I appreciated that because, you know, I didn't know how to have a gentleman friend. And I thank you for that, Blaine. And I am honored that you would be here tonight. You got here to Alcoholics Anonymous before I did. Thank you for showing me the way. I really appreciate that. So many valuable lessons. I thought I was going to come here to learn how to drink like a lady. In fact, what I envisioned initially was just give me 3 or 4 little shots and then let me know which one sends me into a blackout, because I always black out. And that wasn't what happened. I did learn that there is some kind of physical allergy. There's a soul sickness that goes with it. You know, alcohol just filled this hole, and it is extremely devious telling me that it's my friend. And the truth is, it was never my friend. It was my enemy. It robbed me of 10 years of my life. Gosh, there's so much I want to say, and I'm going to run out of time. But I have met so many women in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was very resistant to that initially. For the first 5 years of going to AA meetings, and initially for 2 years, I went to a meeting, at least a meeting every day. I was afraid. I didn't really know how to do life, like I said, without being under the influence of it. And even with my family, I remember, I think it was my first Christmas, and for whatever reason, I was uncomfortable being around my family. And, you know, if you hang around here long enough, you hear that it's really good for us to get a service position. And I had asked somebody to help me, and she suggested, yeah, you should. And in every AA meeting, there's a treasurer, there's a secretary, so there's a setup committee. I mean, we got people making coffee. And I signed up to be the chip person. And it was Christmas Eve. And a really bad place for me to be is by myself. And I was by myself. I may have gone to my family gathering that night, but a very short time is all I spent there. It was uncomfortable. There was still lots of drinking going on, and I still wasn't okay with myself. So I went to my meeting in Seal Beach, where I was the chip person. And I was feeling so full of self-pity that I was starting to entertain the idea, maybe I should just have one. And I turn the corner onto PCH, and I hear the chips in the back seat kind of jingling around. And I thought, here's how my head is always out to get me. Nobody's going to be there. It's Christmas Eve. Nobody else is alone. You know, it's just self-sabotage. And sure enough, I pulled up, and the parking lot was full. And I got to give out chips that night, and I made it through a holiday where it was a real struggle for me. And my head was out to get me. You know, there's something about alcoholism. I have close friends. They've been sober a long time, and it doesn't matter our length of sobriety. It doesn't matter. I have seen so many people that they end up going to the dentist. They have dental work, and they truly need pain medicine. But something about substances that change our are they're mood altering, can wake it up. I'm really, really careful about stuff like that, and I don't ever want to lose sight of it that, you know, I don't like saying I'm Suzanne, I'm an alcoholic. I haven't had a drink in a while. But I don't want to overlook the fact that I know that I never drank like a normal lady. And today, I have absolutely no desire. My relationship with my family is, it's amazing that the opportunity to repair that was there. And if I can just do something, I'll demonstrate for you. If my family and friends that came to support me tonight can just stand up for a second. I love you guys. I do.
We love you.
Okay. Do you know when I first started coming to meetings, I had one friend. And that was my drinking buddy. And my boys know who that is. And, you know, God bless her. I hope that she survived. I wasn't able to stay friends with her. The things that I have learned here, I never imagined. I thought I was just going to learn how to drink like a lady. And the things that I've been blessed with, I learned how to sit still here. It might sound really ridiculous, but I could not sit still. So I learned how to sit still. And then once I was able to sit still for 15 minutes, I was able to shut my head off, because I couldn't shut my head off. Just the thinking and the obsession, and I was finally able to shut my head off. I saw a woman that would openly cry at an AA meeting, and at first I thought, wow, what a wuss, because I don't do that. I asked that woman to sponsor me because she knew something I didn't. And, you know, I think we were made to shed tears, and she helped me learn how to do that. You know, the step work that I had the opportunity to do, Angela helped me initially. I was at her house in Arizona, and I remember working on a four-step with you. So, you know, if anybody is suggesting that there's pages and pages and days and hours, I hear people say, oh, I did my fourth and I was there for 17 hours. And I thought, holy crap, I hope I never have to sponsor anybody like that, because I'm going to probably cut them off after 2 hours. I'm not that patient. But what my sponsor had me do was just write one page. Step one is admitted that I'm powerless over alcohol, that my life was unmanageable. How was it unmanageable? Oh, I have been negligent of my children. I've lied to my parents who love me so much. You know, I've stolen from my employer, because when I show up and I don't feel good and I can't function at 100%, I'm not doing my employer any favors. And I did that repeatedly. That's all step one is. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than yourself can restore your sanity. Like I told you earlier, people were holding hands here, they were praying, they were saying G-O-D, and I was like, no. I was brought up in a religious home, that's not where I'm going. But something kept me here enough where I could get over myself and realize there is a power greater than me, and I better ask for some help. And for me, initially, it was my Tuesday home group that became the power greater than Suzanne. I witnessed so many miracles there. I witnessed people that were ready and willing to love on me and take my phone calls and let me ask dumb questions. And I watched so many people physically, I would see the change. One evening I saw Jim come in my home group, and Jim probably was, I don't know, 78, something like that. And there I was, 31, 32, and I thought, oh, poor Jim. He's really way old to be getting here. And Jim's butt had been kicked by that age, by alcohol. His eyes were so red, his nose was huge and bulging and red, and his face was on fire, and he walked with a gait that, you know, you could tell. He was full of shame. I knew it because I had that before. And you know what happened for me is Jim made that his home group too. And do you know, I watched, first of all, physically him change. I saw a smile start to break on that man's face, and I saw the red in his eyes go away. And, you know, it taught me a really valuable lesson that those of us that make it here, no matter how old or young or broken, or, you know, some of us have a high bottom. I still had a job when I got here, barely. It taught me the lesson that it didn't matter, and that what's most important is, you know, if you aren't able to have a life that's full of, as my husband uses the term, love, joy, peace, and freedom, which is how I think we were designed to have. Sure, lots of trials and tribulations, but that's how we get to learn, huh, Jared? We learn about that stuff by the things where we have struggles. And, you know, I am so grateful. All three of my grandkids are here tonight, and they've never seen their grandma under the influence. My husband has never seen me under the influence. My daughter-in-law. Okay, my sisters. Whole nother story. Okay, we did have some crazy nights. My sister Jill, she freaking always barfs. However, I kept very firm boundaries with her, and I always made her clean it up the next day. I'm so grateful to have the life that I have today. My in-laws, what wonderful, I couldn't choose a better family to have married into. I have several brother-in-laws. I call him one of my favorites. His son, too, and my mother-in-law and her husband. And I think about it sometimes and I go, how did I get this life? How did it change like this to come in here and have so much wreckage? You know, I had to get my name changed. I had to get my boys' names changed. I had to go to court for years. I'm fortunate that I never ended up having to be incarcerated. And truth be told, I probably should have. I'm just so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous and all the gifts that I've been given. I still have a home group. I'm not giving up my chair for anybody or anything. I have a chair at my Tuesday night women's group. It's at the Trinity Church on Walnut and Acres. That meeting is from 6:30 to 8 on Tuesday nights. I would welcome any of those. It's a closed meeting for alcoholic women only. And, you know, I go there because I want to give back what's been so freely given to me. Nobody charged me anything, and so many people have spent time with me. I have valuable friendships. As I look straight back, my friend Debbie and Alice and Danette and Pat and Annie and Tom and Diane and Sandy and Michelle and, oh my gosh, Diane and so many people, Claudia, and I see you ladies and you gentlemen, and I am I'm honored that I have gotten to experience the life that I have today. Initially, Bill, I was so resentful. I did not want to come up here and speak again, because I did a few years ago. But thank you for asking me. Thank you for being such a wonderful husband, and I love you very much, and I am so proud to be your wife, and as I look at my sons, I am so proud to be your mother. There was a time in our lives, I got sober, and they were only 10 and 11, I think, and you know, they were pissed.
They were pissed, rightly so. I just can't believe what great relationships we have today. I would call you in a heartbeat if I needed to talk to you about something, and I think it's mutual today. It hasn't always been that way, but I am so grateful, and this is just how it works for us. Stick around, and I hope that you find what I have found here so much more than just giving up and putting a plug in the jug. There's so much more to it. Find somebody that has worked the steps. Ask them, have you worked any steps? Because the solution is in the steps. It's a way that we can get free of all of the baggage that is associated with alcoholism, because you know what? It's truly a disease of loneliness and isolation. It may look like fun at some point, but for those of us that have a problem with it, and I don't believe everybody that drinks has a problem with it. I know plenty of drinkers that don't have a problem with it, but I do, and that's the most important thing for me to know. So anyway, God bless you all, and thanks so much for listening.
All right. Well, what a pleasure. Thank you, Suzanne.